Mornings can start feeling the same. Wake up, brush teeth, go to work. But with breakfast from Wendy's, it's like, wake up, brush teeth, baconate with a breakfast baconator, roll with the sausage breakfast burrito, buddy it up with a honey buddy, or get seasoned with seasoned potatoes, and then go to work. Sorry. When you're ready for a fresh wake-up call, gotta be Wendy's.
At participating U.S. Wendy's during breakfast hours.
Hello and welcome to the Full of Beans podcast, hosted by myself, Hannah, a registered associate nutritionist and your favourite crazy bean. Full of Beans is on a mission to reduce eating disorder stigma and increase eating disorder awareness. Together, we will establish inspiring conversations with a range of individuals, including those with personal experience and their loved ones, as well as clinicians, researchers, and charities who are all working to increase the understanding of eating disorders. Using my personal battle with atypical anorexia and body dysmorphia, as well as my master's in eating disorders and clinical nutrition, we will together explore the experiences of like-minded individuals who are equally as passionate about sharing their stories to increase the understanding of eating disorders. Please note that this podcast discusses sensitive topics and should not be seen as a replacement for evidence-based therapy or treatment.
Today we are joined by the extremely talented Jodie, the founder of Jodie Yates Art. Jodie is an intersexual feminist who loves nothing more than painting tits and bits. Jodie uses her art to challenge the norms of structures of the male gaze. She aims to empower people to accept their bodies as they are and really champion the body neutrality in her work. So, Jodie, how are you doing today?
Hi, yeah, I'm good, thank you. Tired, as always, through this third lockdown, but other than that, I'm surviving.
Yeah, good. I'm so excited to have you on today. I think it's so nice because you're one of my closest friends, but also, like, you know, just talking about your work, it's so beautiful. So I'm really excited to have a chat about it.
Oh, that's so kind. Yeah, and I'm really excited as well, actually. I mean, I think, you know, I love all that you've been doing with your Instagram and now this podcast. I think it's great and obviously honoured that you wanted to have me on.
Of course. Who better to talk about body positivity with art? It's fantastic. So to get us started, I kind of wanted to focus on the kind of feminism aspect of things. So I think feminism is often interpreted quite differently for different people. I think there's a lot of kind of, I would say, different levels maybe of feminism. So could you describe what feminism means to you?
Yes, definitely. I think feminism is actually such an interesting one because, as you say, that there's different levels and it literally does mean different things to different people. Mm. I mean, there are different waves of feminism, but I won't get into all the history of it. I mean, feminism to me fundamentally sort of comes down to, I mean, the equality of the sexes, but I guess actually not just equality, but equity. So, I mean, what I mean by this is whilst through equality an individual or a group of people is given the same resources or opportunities, equity sort of recognises that each person has different circumstances and then allocates the exact resources and opportunities needed to reach an equal outcome. So it's slightly different. And in terms of feminism and I guess women's rights as well, for me, that doesn't mean sort of just allowing women the same opportunities to get a certain job, for example, like putting it very plainly. As for many women, this mere opportunity, like, it doesn't always help them, as there are other factors involved, such as money, or I guess like lack of money, race, gender identity, ability, and so on. So in some cases, it means sort of supporting women in different ways, I guess, such as economically, to enable them to take advantage of those opportunities. Mm. So, yeah, I mean, it's one of those things where you could literally, that's a whole different podcast, I think. But yeah, I think that's sort of what it means to me at the moment. It changes, I guess, as you learn different things as well.
Yeah. And I think that's really interesting, isn't it? Because I think a lot of the time, you know, initially, I say when feminism started becoming a big thing, I mean, you know what I mean by that, like when people started actually like talking about it, it was kind of seen as like equality for all and women deserve exactly what men deserve. But at the end of the day, like, we are different. And, you know, it's like what you were saying, giving a woman, you know, the equal kind of rights for one thing might actually not be beneficial, so we don't need exactly the same.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that's sort of what it comes down to. I mean, I guess, yeah, as I said, like fundamentally, feminism does sort of just mean to me like equality of the sexes, but there's no point in giving someone equality like to do something if they're not also given those sort of resources to be able to take advantage of that. So yeah, that's sort of where the idea of equity comes in, I think. So yeah, you're saying sort of exactly what I was saying as well.
And like, you know, we mentioned at the start that you're an intersexual feminist. So could you just explain what that means? Because I personally have not heard of that before.
Yeah, sure. So the term intersectional feminism was coined by a woman called Kimberly Crenshaw in 1989. She was an American law professor. And basically the concept centers around the idea that inequalities were not created equal. So it touches, I guess, on what we've just been speaking about. Basically sort of recognizes that different factors such as race, class, sexual orientation, ability, among others, affect gender equality. So for example, another very simple example, a Black woman not only experiences, I guess, the disadvantage and discrimination and prejudice from sexism, but then also racism as well. And intersectionality basically is about how those two inequalities affect one another and affect, I guess, that person's life, their, you know, prospects for money, for job, for in society, everything like that. And so it is important that your feminism is intersectional, because it shouldn't be excluding people based on their gender, on their race, on their socioeconomic status, or any of those other sort of factors that I've just mentioned. But yeah, again, another like really sort of huge topic. And yeah, I guess like I'm no sort of expert in the field either. So I mean, if you want to know and sort of understand more about intersectionality, there are obviously some great people you can follow on Instagram. And a few that I would maybe point you to are to a page called just @feminist. There's the Slum Flower. There's Galdem as well. So that's G-A-L-D-E-M. There's Laura Bates, who people may have come across because she's written quite a few books around feminism and women's rights and misogyny. And also a woman called Amika George as well. And she's an activist. So yeah, so there's a few which I can think of.
Yeah, well, thank you for those recommendations. I think it's always really helpful when people are looking to, you know, be educated more, to kind of have the guidance of where to go with that. So thank you for that. And I think actually that quite nicely links in to eating disorders in a weird way, because I think even at the moment there's a massive stereotype in that like eating disorders are white, middle-class females, probably a teenager. And it's just, as you know, as we're seeing, it's just not the case. And not everybody is emaciated and things like that. So I think that ties in really nicely and kind of don't just see something as one thing. There are so many other areas that you need to consider. And yeah, it's great, you know, if you're raising awareness for whether it's feminism or whether it's eating disorders, it's great if you're talking about it. But there's so many other things that you need to consider as well.
Yeah, definitely. I think you know, with eating disorders and with anything really, there's just so much more nuance there than I guess society allows. Just the expectation that someone with an eating disorder is going to be a white sort of teenager. And even something is like, I feel like when people think of eating disorders, I think immediately they probably think of like anorexia. Yeah. Obviously there are so many different eating disorders and disordered eating and stuff like that. Like, it just, society doesn't allow for the nuances and it doesn't allow for representation of different people. Mm-hmm. And things like intersectional feminism really would help support, you know, it all grow and just be much more representative of everyone.
And what sort of things have they done, if they have, to talk about, you know, different races and all of that, that maybe the eating disorder awareness community could kind of take on board in order to spread awareness for the different genders and races and stuff that also experience eating disorders?
Yeah, so I mean, what intersectional feminism is like, yeah, really good for is basically just raising awareness of how different groups of people are excluded from everything. So like you say, like different races, different sexualities. I mean, intersectional feminism kind of it's sort of quite, it's like the opposite basically. Second wave feminism, I think, was very sort of white feminism. So basically white women, white middle class women. And intersectional feminism is obviously the opposite of that, because they try to include, or they do include, all races, all genders, all identities, things like that. So I think definitely the sort of eating disorder, I guess, community, I think is that how you said it? I don't know if that's
Yeah, I
wrong.
mean, I guess it feels weird saying it like that. I guess maybe if we put awareness in there, it sounds less like we're all kind
Awareness
of promoting
community.
the wrong message.
Yeah, that does sound quite bad. Sorry about that.
That's all
But yeah,
right.
they could definitely take on some messages and ideas from how intersectional feminism sort of operates. And it's again like, if you're in the field of raising awareness about eating disorders and promoting support and things like that, and you're looking to be more representative, it's about following those kind of people who I just mentioned. They, sort of following their sort of habits and their behaviors online, that will really sort of help you to broaden those horizons.
Something that I would like your opinion on this, because I think sometimes when there's almost something that, I mean, I'm obviously a female, but like I don't specifically maybe know a lot about feminism, so sometimes I'm scared of saying the wrong thing. And I think that that can happen quite often with eating disorders, in that people are scared of saying the wrong thing because maybe they haven't experienced an eating disorder, so they don't say anything at all. So do you think that it's better to kind of maybe not risk, but kind of say something that maybe might not be the right thing to say, but learn from it? Or is it better to just not?
Yeah, it's such a tricky one, really, and I think it actually just sort of comes down to the type of person that you are. I mean, I'm no influencer, but I've obviously seen, many sort of influencers, or I guess sort of celebrities, who say something and they're basically attacked by the PC police. And I think, yeah, it's such a tricky one. Because if you're willing to sort of risk that, I guess, of vilification and, harassment from these trolls, effectively, because they are trolls, then that's great. You should say things, and then you should, pick up on what people say and think, oh, actually, yeah, reflect on it. That what I just said, wasn't the best thing, but now I know for next time. Whereas actually, if you don't say anything, then you never learn.
Yeah,
And it's
that's
just,
true.
I think it's such a shame that like society, tabloids, media, and then actually people who follow you, that if they don't allow you to grow and learn like that, it's so bad. There's just no room for learning in this culture, I think.
No. But I'm really glad you said that, actually, because I think that is the way to look at it. Is okay, so yes, the first time, second time, whatever, you might say something wrong, but it's better to say something wrong and learn for it than never say anything at all, because I think then you just look like you don't care about it.
Yeah, exactly. And actually, as I said, this was the, I'm no influencer, and this was in no way sort of like a, I guess, a public experience, but more of like just, I guess, a personal sort of internal experience. The other day, I was speaking to a colleague, and I was, I guess, ranting about something which I thought was really silly, what another colleague had done. And then I read something the other day about this sort of this specific thing, and sort of thought, oh, actually, I think I was in the wrong there, ranting about this and shaming this other person for doing whatever they were doing. And I thought, oh, okay, so I know, sort of know for next time, obviously not to say that, and maybe there is a different reason behind why they were doing this. So yeah, it's just things like that. And we but like it's so much worse, I think, if you have like a massive following, and if actually you'd said that something like that publicly, and then you have all these people who are like sort of shouting at you and telling you off, and it can obviously make you feel like you never want to sort of speak out again. And obviously, so luckily for me, it was with a trusted friend that I was speaking to about this, and now I obviously have gone away, learned something new, and I can reflect on that conversation and think, oh, actually, yeah, I'm actually in the wrong there, so I won't obviously say that again.
Yeah, and I think as long as you're willing to learn, I think that's the like important part about it, isn't it?
Definitely.
So in terms of your art, which is stunningly beautiful, so everyone should go
Thank
and have
you.
a look at it. What kind of sparked your inspiration to start painting nude portraits?
Yeah, I mean, I think generally I'm inspired by, I guess, feminism itself, and I guess the art is great, because I'm able to use like this practice and this art to explore this ideology of feminism and this sort of view on the world. But I guess more generally, I'm anything that aims to sort of empower and uplift women is a big source of inspiration for my creativity. And I try to use my painting to reflect this as well. And I do believe that's sort of why we meant so many of us find movements such as the body positivity movement so inspiring. And whilst I'm very much at the in like in the early stages of an art career, I do sort of envision my work to be a space where women can, I guess, escape the pressures of society and sort of at least find sort of neutrality and peace and acceptance of with their bodies, because it's such an empowering thing, I think, even for myself to paint myself. It's so empowering.
Have you
But
done
then for
that?
some, I have,
Oh,
yes.
wow. That's incredible.
I know. Well, you see, if you're lacking inspiration, all you need to do is take a picture of your naked body and paint that.
And how did you find that when you did that? Was it kind of a nerve-wracking thing at the start, and then afterwards you thought, wow, look at me go? Or, how did it change your view at all?
Yeah, it's an interesting one. I mean, because obviously I'm just sort of painting by myself and painting myself by myself, I thought that was fine. No one was really like sort of like an onlooker in that sort of experience. But I guess the more sort of then posting that on Instagram and sharing that with, followers and people who may come across my page, like that's a bit daunting, because it's like you look at this photo and I was sort of outing myself as like, oh, this is a self-portrait here. And then, people look at that and think, oh my God, that's Jodie naked. And like, it's a bit difficult. I mean, because I use so much colour and it's quite abstract as well, my paintings, it's not as hard to look at that and think, oh my God, that's what she looks like naked. So that played to my favour a bit. But so it was quite scary doing that part of it. But getting so much like positive feedback of people being like, wow, that's so cool that you did that, that's so empowering, then obviously it kind of boosts your confidence a bit. And obviously people are appreciative of the art itself, and that's good for the ego. So yeah, it's an interesting process. But I think it's so much more potentially so much more daunting for other people coming to me and being like, can you paint me? Because they obviously have to send like that photo of, if it's of themselves, they have to send the photo for me. So that's quite daunting. But I think it's potentially even more beneficial for them, for their sort of body acceptance, the how they view themselves. I think it's much more beneficial and has a much bigger impact than if I was to just paint myself,
I
because I've
can
seen how I
imagine.
look.
I can imagine that would be like really incredible to send you a picture, which I imagine would be quite a daunting thing, but then to get back something, because you do use such bright colors and all the glitter and everything, it must be like, I don't know, it's kind of, if you were insecure about your body or whatever, to then receive such a beautiful piece of artwork, I think, would be really empowering, like you said.
Yeah, definitely. I think that's it. Like, you get such a sort of sense of gratification and a sense of reward. You get something back basically from doing that really scary thing. So it's so rewarding, I think. And like, I've come across so many talented people on in the sort of art community, as I would call it. And even though like, I can paint myself, I've definitely been tempted to sort of send obviously photos to other people and be like, oh, can you make this the clay sculpture of me, can you paint me and stuff like that. Like that would be really cool. It's just like another, I think, another step up from like accepting yourself. Being able to do something like that is very cool.
Yeah, definitely. And what, you said about the fact that you do use loads of colour and it's quite abstract. Is that a way that you've always painted, or is that something you picked up when you started to paint portraits?
Yeah, I guess I've always sort of used lots of colour. I just find it's like a sort of good form of escapism in a way, because I guess what the UK is like, it can be quite dull outside with the weather and everything.
Especially at the
And you
moment.
definitely, yeah. And using colour is just, a great way to, I guess, represent positivity as well. Obviously lifting your mood and things like that. It brightens a room, and on a, I guess, a different level sort of signifies like the sort of freedom and liberation that you'd want people to have, just being able to paint, so freely. And like, because it's abstract, it's not realism for me. That's great because, you know, things don't have to be perfect. And that's liberating as well, being able to just put your paintbrush to a canvas and just see where it takes you, basically.
And I think it's really nice as well, because I think there's so much, especially nowadays, of you have to have the perfect body. But, you know, your paintings, like you just said, they're not always perfect because they are abstract. And I think that's such a nice way of looking at your own body. You know, if you see a painting that's not perfect, why do you need to be perfect? So I guess it's really nice in that way that your artwork isn't necessarily perfect, because it's then like, well, actually my body doesn't need to be perfect anyway.
Yeah, I think that's actually a really nice way of putting it. And when you were speaking about that, I immediately thought of how everyone says art is subjective. Like, you can look at a Van Gogh painting and one person be like, oh, that's amazing, another person be like, I don't get it, I don't like it. And like, that's how you should sort of view yourself in a way. Yeah. I mean, just accepting that not everyone's going to like you. Your body type maybe is not everyone's cup of tea, but you will always be someone's cup of tea, and you should definitely always be your own cup of tea.
Yeah, I love that.
Yeah, definitely.
I think it's so true though, and I think it's that with your body, with your personality, whatever. I always think, I don't like everybody, so why would I expect everybody to like me? Like, it's just never gonna happen.
Yeah,
I think for years I spent loads of time trying to be a different person so that I fit in and everybody liked me and stuff, and now I'm just like, you know what, this is me, and at the end of the day, you know, I've got lovely friends and that I'm happy with, that I don't need everybody to like me.
Yeah, exactly. I always obviously when you're a teenager and you're sort of growing up in like secondary school and everything, you want to sort of be like, I guess, like the popular kids, and you obviously do everything you can to try and be, you know, fit in with them. And also you can see, I guess, like from the outside, everyone looks a bit like a clone of each other. And I just sort of, I think like now I'm on a such a different level of like confidence. I didn't have that much confidence really. I mean, I was confident with my friends, but not with really like anyone else. And I just love to sort of do secondary school again and just be like that person who didn't care, because I don't care, you know. It's like, it's so silly, all the things like which really mattered back then, which you don't faze me now at all.
Something I think is really positive though, like, I've been listening to a lot of Happy Place by Fern Cotton, and you know, most of her guests are older than us, you know, like whether they're 30s or 40s, what have you, and you know, they're all saying, you know, now when they're that age, that's when they're starting to accept themselves and be a bit different. But I think it's really positive that actually people our age, you know, like 20s or whatever, are now starting to do that as well. So I'm just hoping that, because that's trickled down to us at an earlier age, hopefully we can then pass that on to the next generation, then they'll be even younger, realizing that actually I don't have to fit this mold, I can be who I want to be.
Yeah, definitely. And I think if we go back to social media as well, like, whilst it can be such a horrible place in terms of, you know, seeing all of these, you know, different bodies and being like, I want to look like that, if you use it right, social media is a great tool to then, you know, tell people to sort of accept themselves and stop comparing themselves to others. And just imagine if actually it was used in that way, like you say, all those sort of the generation down from us, they'll all be loving themselves, you know, when they're 12.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, you spoke about before, like accepting your body, and this is something that I'm really passionate about, because I think at the moment it's kind of, we've gone from being in despair with our bodies to now, oh, you have to love every single part of you, and you know, bring all the passion, and you're so beautiful, blah blah blah. But nobody feels like that every day. And I've kind of tried to reach a point where I'm just, like you said, accepting of my body. And some days I'll look in the mirror and think, yeah, you go, girl, you look fantastic.
Definitely,
but other days I'll look in the mirror and I'll think, yeah, that's my body today, but it's literally just my body. It doesn't make me who I am. So how do you think, you know, for that generation below us, how can we reach that acceptance rather than all this, I don't know, different messages that we're now trying to achieve?
Yeah, I think it's such an interesting one, isn't it? And as an outsider looking on to support for people with eating disorders, I can see how it would very much be like, oh, stop hating yourself, just love yourself, you know. And that's so difficult for someone
who's so extreme as well.
Exactly, yeah, they're two extremes, and you can't go from one extreme to the other. It's just not how it works. And I think there is a much better way of sort of looking at yourself, a much more positive step to take in that sort of journey of self-acceptance. And I guess that would be sort of body neutrality, which is a concept I've sort of discovered from an activist called Jamila Jamil. Don't know if you know.
Yes, her. She does Ai Wei.
Yes, yeah.
Yes, I love her, yeah.
She's amazing. I think she's such a sort of positive force.
Absolutely.
In society, in the world. And basically this concept of body neutrality is that sort of mindset which challenges this sort of movement of body positivity, which we've touched on already. And whereas body positivity encourages people basically to sort of love themselves and emphasizes that all bodies are beautiful, which is of course true, it can be very hard for someone who is not in a very good place at all with their body and with their mind. So body neutrality is then more focused on accepting your body as it is without that extremity of loving or hating your body. And it values this, I guess, the facts of what your body actually does over how it looks. So whereas, you know, you look in the mirror and you think, oh, I love my body. I love, you know, my stretch marks. You know, I love the curves and stuff like that. You'd be like, oh, I'm just, you know, I'm proud of my body for functioning, for helping me breathe every day, for processing the food that I eat and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So neutrality is so much more attainable and sustainable in a world that basically does not encourage women to feel positive about their bodies anyway. And of course, it's not to say that neutrality is easy to attain either, or that it's the better one overall. I mean, I have touched on this before, but we need to be sort of nuanced here. So it's what works for you really, and allowing yourself the patience and time to basically move along that sort of journey. I mean, the idea is that you move away from, you know, self-hatred, but whatever then works for you was what works for you, and you shouldn't let anyone tell you otherwise.
Yeah. And I think it's this whole, it's just moving away from that whole black and white idea of things, in that you either love yourself or you hate yourself sort of thing, because that, I think that displays the wrong message as well. Because okay, so you've moved away from maybe, like, you know, disliking your body, but then if one day you wake up and you don't love your body, you're just going to feel equally as rubbish as you did on the day that you didn't like your body, because you're like, oh, now I can't even love my body, so I'm not even successful at that. Like, I might as well just pack it all in and forget about it.
Exactly, yeah. It's, as I said, like, such a difficult one, and it's just so hard, I think, as you say, for someone to be like trying to, obviously, I guess, go through recovery process and then feeling like they're also failing. And it's just obviously it's so bad in terms of mental health and mental illness, let alone recovering from like an eating disorder. It's just so difficult, and I just wish that people just accepted the nuance in things.
And I think this is something that we've chatted about personally over the past few weeks, is that lockdown has given us both an opportunity to kind of reevaluate what we do for ourselves, particularly in sport. But do you think as well that it's this time has been able to allow you to be more flexible with your body image as well as the sport that you do?
Yeah, so obviously I've gone from this journey of, I've always been interested in sport. I used to do sort of athletics and sort of running, and then I moved to uni, and then I did rowing. But I've always been sort of basically committed to sort of one thing at a time, and there's always been one goal in mind. So I did rowing, and then after I sort of fell out of love with that, I then found powerlifting, and I was sort of obsessed with that because I loved training in the gym, and I was doing that for a few years, and then I found powerlifting. I was like, oh my god, this is amazing. I just wanted to be the strongest that I could ever be, and I was never attaining sort of, I guess, I was doing that thing. I was comparing myself to other people and other women, and I was looking at them thinking, why can't I lift that much? Why can't I do it? Like, I weigh this much, I should be lifting that much, and stuff like that. And that wasn't very good in terms of my mental health, I think, reflecting on it now. And then I guess leaving uni, I then didn't have enough time for things like powerlifting, because you need to commit. You need to commit, don't you? And so And then just doing other things like getting a job, I was just too busy. And then when lockdown came around and also you couldn't go to the gyms, then that actually did just allow me the bit of the freedom to sort of chill out a bit and be like, okay, you're going to lose some muscle here. Like you're not going to come out of this as strong as you were. And then just actually just accept that and think, okay, so what actually do I want to do and what makes me feel good? And now I've been able to sort of do other things like HIIT sessions, and I absolutely hate, or I guess I still do hate cardio. I mean, HIIT sessions are all right, but I obviously did, loads of those, and it was a great sort of family affair for me as well because we were all doing them, and so that just brought a bit more excitement, I guess, into that. And I think, yeah, flexibility with everything is just such a much better, I guess, like outlook on life as well. Just allows you that freedom to sort of just literally see how your body is feeling or what you want from day to day, and then just going with that flow.
Yeah, I think that's sort of the problem with having such a fixed routine in training, isn't it? It's you never give yourself a chance to think, am I actually doing this because I want to, or am I doing this just because it's kind of what I feel like I have to do? And I think that fits with, the whole body image thing as well, is am I looking like this because this is how I naturally do look, or am I being really restrictive, and putting things into place that are making me look this way, which, that's not a healthy place to be at.
Yeah, definitely. And I think that's where society obviously is such a bad place for that, because you sort of you're looking at things, you don't really realize that you're taking in all of this information as you scroll, and then that obviously feeds information to your brain, and then you end up thinking a certain way. You end up thinking like, I need to do this so I can look this way, or why do I look this way? And then you should really be sort of just checking in with yourself and being like, oh, what do I want? What is it that I want from this? What do I feel like? And yeah, going with that.
And I think it's funny as well, like, I don't think people realize, because you're not like reading necessarily, which I think is the worst part. You, when you're on social media, you take in so much information because you're just flicking through pictures and pictures. I actually went on to my, like your discovery thing on Instagram. I barely go on there because it's never what I want to see. But there were so many like before and after pictures, or people like, curled over and they've got, they're trying to show that
Don't.
they've got rolls or whatever. And it's just like, I just think that these before and after pictures are saying, the before body type was wrong, but the after type is better. And equally, the pictures where people contort their bodies are saying that their body type, when they're not putting to themselves into positions to make them appear differently, is wrong. And none everybody then feels like their body is wrong because you've got people actively still trying to change themselves. We've just moved to another detrimental area on social media, and that it's still not empowering. And I just don't know how we get to a point where it is empowering, because I don't know. I think the difficulty is that everybody's different. That what's empowering for one person maybe won't be for another. And how do you even begin to navigate that?
I know. It do you know what really winds me up about what something that you just mentioned there, like, really triggered me. Not properly triggered me, but it was just riling me up. And it's when basically women who have bodies that are socially acceptable, basically slim, maybe you're curvy, you know what I mean, and then they basically, as you say, sort of contort themselves in different positions to try and prove that they have roles and they are not perfect and whatever, when actually they just look the same. And but when they're contorting is like the key word there, because they're really like they're forcing themselves over. Like, you wouldn't normally stand like that. Yeah, sure, if you're gonna bend over like that, you're gonna get some rolls. Anyone would. And it just really it damages the body positivity movement, really, and sort of body acceptance as well. Because someone who is really struggling with their body, who doesn't look like that, would look at them and be like, well, that's just not fair. And the another huge problem with it comes back to that intersectionality and that sort of issue of representation as well, because these basically skinny people, these slim women, are taking up a space where which should be designated to sort of, I guess, fat people, because that's where the body positivity movement actually originated from. It's a sort of, I guess, a fat positivity movement, or these people coming out and being like, yeah, I look how I am. I know society doesn't like it, but I like it. And then basically skinny women who are already accepted in society are coming into this space, and they are taking it away from people who it was meant for.
I'm going to say something controversial here.
But... Go on.
No, sorry in advance. I don't know. I completely agree with what you're saying, but I also... It's difficult to put into words, but just because somebody maybe has a body that is, like, you know, accepted in society, it doesn't necessarily mean that they accept it.
Oh, yes, so, of course, yeah.
So... I completely get what you mean, and that there, you know, there needs to be that space. But I personally think that we should be able to get to a point where everybody is able to feel kind of accepted and empowered. And I think kind of where we're going at the moment is that people that maybe do have bodies that are stereotypically accepted, but don't see them as like okay in their own eyes, are then getting, people are getting angry at them for saying, well, you've got a perfect body already, so why do you need to, you know,
yeah, say just like I just did.
I think it's just a really, it's, that's why I said it's really difficult to navigate, because
yeah, definitely,
everybody is different, everybody deserves to feel like their body is beautiful, but then in that someone's going to be offended.
And I do actually completely appreciate that you challenged me. I think that's really good, because I have just missed out on a really important aspect there, and I obviously have said something, I guess, which is not fair at all, which of course, yeah, people who have bodies who are accepted by society doesn't mean that they are automatically going to love their bodies either, of course. And without trying to sort of, I guess, defend myself, I think sort of what I was just trying to say was...
you don't need to defend yourself. I'm not having a go. I was just being controversial.
Hannah, please, you've really upset me. No, do you know what? I won't even try and defend myself, because I don't really know how to, because I actually completely appreciate what you said.
Mm. And it's actually perfect that that did happen, because, you know, you were saying at the start of this that sometimes you can say something and it's better to say something and it be wrong and you learn from it. And that's exactly what's just happened, you know, like you said something that missed an aspect of the situation, but that's absolutely fine. And now maybe that's changed your outlook. Maybe it hasn't, like, I don't know. It's completely down to you to take away from that. But I just think that that's the sort of conversations we need to be having, and people need to have the confidence to challenge that. You know, I never would have used to have the confidence, but I think, you know, this is something I'm very passionate about, and that's my opinion. But equally, if you'd have turned around then and said, you know what, no, Hannah, that's not how I feel, and I do agree with my initial point, then that is your opinion. But having those conversations just allows us to kind of maybe reframe what we're talking about, or just see things from a different angle.
I guess we said before, not everybody is everyone's cup of tea.
Mm-hmm.
It's just how it is. Right, people just need to accept that they're not going to be accepted by everyone.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that is the simplest, isn't it? That somebody is not going to like the way you look, but actually someone else is going to absolutely adore it. And really, what does it matter? Because it's about yourself. And as long as you're happy, then I think that's kind of the key.
Yeah, definitely. You just really sort of hit the nail on the head there. I think, like, yeah, someone might not like you. But yeah, someone might, but actually it doesn't matter. Who likes you, who doesn't anyway? You need to appreciate and accept yourself first before all else.
Yeah, absolutely. The last question I've been asking is kind of focused around eating disorders. So we've been, obviously this podcast is trying to motivate and inspire others struggling with eating disorders, and to reduce the associated stigma, and to give people the confidence to leave their eating disorder behind. So, you know, what would be the best tip that you have, or like the best advice for individuals like looking for motivation to accept their body and kind of think, I will be okay without my eating disorder?
Yeah, this is, I think, a great thing that you're doing. Like, people are taking something away from it, which is really good. And I think, as we've established, you know, I'm no expert in this field at all, but from my perspective from the outside, I would just really want to encourage those individuals to actually assess what they're viewing on their social media, if they're like in a place where they can do that. So, you know, Instagram and TikTok, for example, TikTok's all the rage now, apparently. and basically make changes to who they're actually following. So if you are scrolling and you sort of come across a post from someone, whether that be actually someone you know from work, from school, or a sort of celebrity or influencer, and if you sort of notice that that's making you feel uncomfortable or leads you down a really unhealthy route in your mind, for example, then you should hopefully then be able to be in a space where you can make those changes where possible to unfriend or unfollow someone or block someone.
Yeah.
If you need to. And then in replacement of those, you should seek more sort of wholesome and positive content. You know, people who do, you know, the things that we've said, who champion body positivity, body neutrality, whatever suits you. That's what I would say to those individuals.
Yeah. I don't know, personally, I get really funny, like, oh, well, that person, you know, makes me feel bad about myself, but I don't want to unfollow them because what if they get offended? But then it's like, well, you know, you're number one, so, you know, look out for yourself. So thank you so much for joining us today. It's been really nice, and I think a really different conversation for the podcast, so really nice and refreshing. But I just wanted to ask, if people do want to check out your lovely artwork, which they absolutely should, where can we find you?
Yes, thank you. I've actually really enjoyed this. It's been so, as you say, refreshing to actually have this kind of conversation as well. Because obviously being in lockdown, I haven't been, I guess, having these conversations with people, let alone any conversation, to be honest. So thank you for having me. I'm on Instagram, so you can find me at Jodie Yates Art. And I also sell some of my work on Etsy, so you can search my shop, which is, again, Jodie Yates Art as well. So yeah, if you like what you see, please follow.
Of course. Well, thank you very much, Jodie.
Yes, thank you. It's been lovely.
That conversation was really refreshing for me, and I think it summed up what we're about on Full of Beans, is having those conversations about things that you maybe don't know a lot about, but we're all here to learn, and by having discussions about different topics, we're widening our vision of eating disorders, of body acceptance, of how society needs to be in order to ensure that everybody feels accepted. So thank you, Jodie, so much for coming and giving us a bit of a different topic today on Full of Beans. Next week, we will be joined by George Mycock, who is just a completely incredible human being, and I am really excited because I will be honest, in the exercise addiction is something that I am still navigating my way through, and having the conversation with George and all of his knowledge was just incredible. He has so much to share and he's so passionate about it all that it really is truly inspiring.
And having guilt around exercise can be something that you can start to notice. So if you don't exercise as much as you wanted to or planned to, do you feel guilt about it? And is that guilt kind of significant? Does it have a significant impact on you? Like, does it actually kind of ruin your mood? Does it break down your day? Does it make it worse?
If you enjoyed listening today, you won't want to miss next week's episode, so please be sure to subscribe. Please also like, comment, and share this podcast with anyone you feel that may be struggling at the moment. Not only those with eating disorders, but also their loved ones, as this can be a difficult time for everyone. Eating disorders are crippling illnesses, and this podcast aims to motivate and inspire others to embark their recovery journey. For further support, please visit the Beat or the First Steps website or speak to your local GP. See you next week. Bye.